Let us begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, someday.
Okay, may we have the roll call, please?
Good evening, commissioners. I'll take the roll call. Chair Hartwig?
I am present.
Vice Chair Hurd?
Present.
Commissioner Castillo?
Present.
And Commissioner Griggs Murphy is excused. Commissioner Montgomery?
Present.
And Commissioner Jung Lee?
Present.
Thank you.
Do we have a motion to approve last meeting's minutes, please?
I'll make that motion, Chair.
Moved, seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, abstentions, carries. Okay, old or unfinished business?
There is none.
Believe there is none. Are there any modifications to the agenda? Hearing none, we are on to new business, item A.
Good evening, commissioners. First, I want to thank you for coming. I know we have a short agenda tonight, and we have one, though, very urgent item before us. And I'm going to actually call Deputy Executive Director Phil Neville up and Bridget Galka, if she's around, if you want to come up and talk briefly about why we're rebonding Ave Vista. But the crux of this is it was a way to save some money. We have the mayor has the what she needs to sign, and we've had the public hearing. And we take action today, we get to save them about $250,000 by doing this today, and we need to close in less than 10 days. So it was all done very rapidly, but it will make the portfolio of the property just perform better. So I'll turn over some brief remarks from Mr. Neville and Ms. Galka.
Commissioners, again, I'm Phil Neville, and we'll remind you that back in 2013, you approved this bond issue, and as a result of approving that financing, our partner Bridge and we went on to build the Ave Vista project, which you're now very proud of, as are we. And there's been some bumps in the road with the financing and the cost of the project, and we've talked to you before about that, but at the end of the day, everything was solved. And I would actually prefer to have Bridget give you a very quick description of what happened, why we're bringing this back to you.
Okay, good evening, commissioners. I'm Bridget Galka, the Assistant Director of the Office of Real Estate Development. This project received a tax-exempt bond loan, and the authority issued the bonds, and they were purchased by J.P. Morgan Chase. At the time of the construction closing, Bridge locked the interest rate for the permanent loan. That was in 2013, and there was a lot of anticipation that interest rates would be increasing. Well, that didn't happen. Interest rates actually went down. So when Bridge came back to the authority, because the project needed a little additional money, they also went to Chase and asked them to, if they could lower the interest rate for the permanent loan. And Chase, unfortunately, the fees associated with unlocking the lock were too high, but they said that only 90% of your permanent loan amount was locked. So we can give you a new interest rate on the 10% that was unlocked, and we can extend the amortization of the loan. So that was a good solution. It brought the blended rate down to 5.15, which netted the project an additional $255,000. It's not really a problem, but Chase, I think they didn't really realize this was a bond deal, and that they needed to check with our bond counsel about this. And so Our bond counsel has reviewed what's happening, and the one caveat being that we needed to do a new TEFRA public hearing, which we did on Friday, and there's a pledge agreement that was part of the original bond documents that had to be modified such that you, the board, had to approve the new pledge agreement. So the new pledge agreement is basically doing what I just suggested. It's extending the amortization of the both loans and then decreasing the interest rate for a small portion, the 10%, that wasn't locked to achieve a blended rate.
And so the amortization went from how many years to how many years?
30 to 35.
Yeah.
And the TEFRA is what kind of
year? It's a tax exempt.
Tax exempt.
Yeah. Financing. It's a requirement that we have a hearing.
Whoop, it's a requirement that we have the hearing. I'm sorry. It's a requirement that we have a public hearing, so anyone who could have, you know, have any comments on the issuance of bonds gets a chance to do so. We did that Friday,
yep.
Correct? And it's called a TEFRA hearing, and it's Tax Credit Finance Allocation Responsibility Act, I think.
But, and it's a federal rule. Anytime you use tax-exempt bonds, you have to have that hearing. Now, nobody ever comes to these hearings.
So the main crux of what we're doing is we're lowering the interest rate on 10% of the bonds, and we're actually extending the amortization rate 5 years. And in doing so, we save a total of 200, I'm not looking.
225,000.
Very good.
Yeah.
And that's the action. So after we take our action, the mayor will sign the letter she has to sign, and it's on her desk as we speak. And they've been really responsive, and I'm grateful for their support in doing this. When you get into operating properties, the $250,000 makes a difference. So why not do it? And that was the attitude on our end. So we've done everything we need to do to bring it to you tonight. And I didn't read the resolution title yet, so I'm going to read it, and then you can take whatever action you would like. The title is consideration of a resolution authorizing and approving the execution and delivery of a first supplemental to bond issuance and pledge agreement and such other documents as may be necessary for the amendment of documents related to the modifications of a $16,532 multifamily housing revenue bonds of a Vista apartment projects in parentheses series 2013 A1 and series 2013 A2 and authorizing the executive director to take any and all actions necessary to implement the resolution.
And we are required to tell you that Bridget brought with her tonight the copies of the of two actual documents, the pledge agreement, and also the tax certificate. And we are required to have those in the room when you take this action.
Wow.
And
very good. And we're here for any questions.
Certainly.
Thank you. This looks really important. I just wanted some clarification. What is 10% of 16 million is approximately how much?
839.
So 839.
That's the portion that's getting a lower.
That's getting changed.
Yeah.
Just that little 839,000.
Correct.
And then, but you mentioned that they are increasing the amortization time for both, for the whole thing?
Right. So it's 10% of the permanent loan amount.
Right.
So
But if it's so locked down, the whole 90%, they were still able to change the amortization rate of the whole 16 million.
Yes.
That's just interesting.
Yeah.
Now, Bridget spoke with our bond attorney at Ballard Spahr and the tax counsel in particular about mm-hmm. this, both of those women at this in this past couple of weeks, and they went over everything, and this is the recipe to make this happen.
Okay.
So Bridget had to get back to Chase Bank and to Bridge Housing because they were kind of taking this step lightly. Oh, we'd just like to modify these. And our attorney said, no, don't let them do it, Bridget. They need to follow us some steps, and we need to take some more action. So.
And the $225,250, is that cash in somebody's pocket at some point in this? Does it translate into what?
A lower per loan amount.
Uh-huh.
So the payments are less.
Less in interest over the 35.
Yes.
Right. Got you. So, okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions?
I have one, I think. So I'm just interested now, we have, by extending the terms of the loan, what is the advantage of that and what is the downside to that? I mean, usually I would assume that that would actually increase interest cost because you now have more time on the loan. So is this $255 just a net out of that did increase the cost? Something else decreased the cost, and the mix came out to $255. Is that how this worked?
That's exactly it. Somehow extending the term, again, on this is just on the permanent portion, as Bridget mentioned, of the loan. Because see, there was construction financing, and then on September 1st, there's a permanent closing that's planned, so all that construction financing gets paid off. And they want to pay off the construction financing as soon as they can because the interest, they want to stop paying interest on that construction loan.
So this $16 million here that we're talking about overall, is this construction financing?
And permanent. Both. It's both.
This is both.
And the construction financing was only for 2.5 or 3 years. I don't remember what the term was, but it was a short term. And then the portion that's permanent is the part that Bridget's been addressing, and that's $8 or $9 million.
Right. So yeah. We issued $16,532,000 bonds, and those have been issued and they're paid for construction. Now at the permanent closing, we're paying down
the bonds.
$8 million or some. I'm sorry, I don't have my numbers in, but
much of that is tax credit equity coming in at the permanent closing.
Right. So initially we were going to pay down so that $10,687,000 was remaining for the permanent loan.
So out of the 16, and I'm just trying to understand this, okay, so out of the $16.5 million in total loan, right? $10 million of that is $10 million of that then construction loan that is going to be taken out in September. See, I guess I'm confused about what are we taking out in September and what role does this have that we're doing here have in whatever's happening in September, or is this to facilitate what we're doing in September?
This is to facilitate what we're doing in September. So on September 1st, we're getting money from the tax credit investor.
On September 1st?
Yes.
Okay, good. So money's coming in from the tax credit investor.
Right.
And that's not a loan.
And that's not a loan. And we're going to pay down some of that $16 million.
With that money?
With that money.
Okay, cool. So that money is coming in, and then that's going to pay off part of the $16 million. Okay.
Right.
And Greg, if you would please, Chair Hartwig, excuse me, remember that this is a almost $30 million project.
Right.
And the bond finance portion of it was $16
million. Right.
Yes.
But as you may recall,
got
there are a number of other sources, including the Housing Authority's funds.
Yes.
And so there are draw meetings that Bridget attends every month and construction meetings every week until the property is completed. But the draw meetings, they're going for 5 or 6 different sources of money during those draws, including draws that the Housing Authority of City of Oakland was paying. And they had several other sources. And $16 million came from the bond issue that was issued, privately placed with Chase Bank. Chase then loaned that money into the project. And now, more equity is coming in. The tax credit equity has already paid a certain amount, but more equity is coming in. The final installments are coming in, and that allows the pay down of that mortgage down to of the lower figure. So the problem with these tax credit projects, they don't get enough rent.
Yes.
To pay off high debt, so they couldn't use rent to pay off $16 million worth of debt.
Right.
So it had to be brought down to a lower number, and the financial analysts looked at it and said, you know, we can afford an $8 or $9 million perm loan. And that's all we're going to, what's the perm loan again? Is it even lower than that? Whatever it is, that's the amount that we'll be paying going forward. And
so it's the permanent loan. Okay, so the permanent loan then is what it's what we've done with the permanent loan that's saving the 255.
Yes.
Is that what it is? Okay, so we have, okay, because this is kind of complicated, actually.
It is. I have to apologize. The resolution was actually written by our bond counsel. So if the resolution might not read.
Is that the guy from Philly?
He's retired, but yes, the same firm.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, right. No, I like him. I know him. I mean,
But it reads differently, is what Bridget's saying, and it's not easy to read because it has to cover everything to issue the bonds.
And because it's legalese,
yes.
And
yes.
I'm not legally trained. So.
Well, if we've written it, we would have written it in regular English, is all
right.
I can tell you.
Yes, I see. So, anyway, I dare not ask any more questions because I might get more confused here. Any more other questions?
Last question.
Commissioner Hurd.
Okay, on page 3, it says that the risk that the bonds will not be paid or paid on time is a risk that the lender is assuming.
Yes.
Okay? I just want to be clear on that. And I'm really glad to see that in the other paragraph that the bonds expressly provide that they are limited obligations and none of the authority commissioners, officers, employees, or agents are liable personally. I'm glad to see that in there. So thank you for putting that in there.
I guess actually I did have one other question. I'm assuming that we spent, I was just thinking about what was going on to make this all happen. But I'm highly confident that we did not spend $255 million to pull off this restructuring, that whatever expenses we incurred were quite a bit less than that.
Right. Bond counsel is about $7,500.
Yes. Okay. Very good.
It was a good net.
Okay. Thank you.
And we're not paying the bond counsel either.
The project pays. The authority does not pay them.
Yeah. Very good.
Which is nice.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. Outside of this particular project, are we going for lower interest rates on other projects too?
We're not really doing any financing right now, but certainly we
could. When you're in the market, and you're ready to, you've designed a building and you've gotten all the pieces of money you need, one of the last things you do before you go into construction is you look for a lender and a tax equity investor. Mm-hmm. And we have competition among lenders and investors to get our business. So we usually get 3 or 4 or 5 banks and investors that want, and they bid, and we try to get the best price that way.
Okay.
So Chase won this particular one, but as you know, we've had Wells Fargo several times. We've had Citibank a couple of times. We've had Bank of America.
Okay.
And some of the smaller banks like Silicon Bank have been involved, like with Chase on one of the projects. And then the investors can be banks as well, although they aren't always banks. So we try to get the best deal.
It just feels like this has been years in works, right?
But we really think the product is such a beautiful one that
absolutely.
You know,
the whole development has.
I
this
just
actually
feel like we opened it up in order to get the lower interest rate.
Well, this change is only recent.
Yes.
This is only just occurring. That's why we're rushing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
If there's no more questions, I'll make a motion, Chair.
Okay. It's been moved.
Second.
Great.
And seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Abstentions? Carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioners. Our next item is a presentation on the Jobs Plus grant. As you know, we were awarded a Jobs Plus grant at the first of this calendar year for $2.7 million, focusing on West Oakland. We have begun officially under the grant on July 1st, but we were able to get a head start, and I wanted to lay out what our goals are and where we are And I thought this was a perfect meeting because we had the shorter agenda and we could walk through it. So I'd like to turn it over first to Andres Manriquez, who is here with Lenita, to give a presentation. And Lenita Wheeler is our Director of Family and Community Partnerships. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Eric. Good evening, Commissioners. I'm very excited, you know, for us to have the Jobs Plus, you know, program in, you know, the Oakland Housing Authority. Yeah, I'm familiar with it, you know, and it's a very, very good thing. And, you know, I really ask for your full support, you know, for this program. So, Lenita, take it away.
Evening, Commissioners. Lenita Wheeler, Family and Community Partnerships Director. I'll be reviewing with you the general overview of the program, how individuals are enrolled. I'll discuss our partners and the Jobs Plus Earned Income Disregard, which is a very significant incentive. Excuse me, and I'll also share with you where we are to date with enrollments and participation. As the director already mentioned, the program officially launched in July, but last two Fridays ago at the West Oakland Back to School Block Party, we had a ribbon cutting and a kickoff there at our Resident Leadership Center.
Wonderful.
The Jobs Plus pilot program is to develop locally based, job-driven approaches to increase earnings. We want to support our families with advancing their employment outcomes through work readiness and connecting them to employers. There's job placement opportunities, educational advancement, support with skills and technology, as well as financial literacy. We were awarded, as Director stated, $2.7 million for this grant over the term of 4 years. That's from 2016 through 2019. We are one of two public housing authorities in the state of California that were awarded this grant in the last go-round. And there are about 17 throughout the country who've been awarded this grant in the last two cycles. Our goal is to enroll over 400 individuals throughout the term of the grant, with the expectation that over 350 of them will actually complete job readiness and vocational training. We're looking to place just over 300 into employment opportunities, two-thirds of those into full-time opportunities, and about a third of those into part-time opportunities. At the bottom of the slide, you see how we've broken out how we're planning on enrolling individuals, the numbers throughout the years. We start slow, ramp up, and then begin to ramp down. It is our intention to enroll as many individuals as we can up front, because the longer that they participate in the program, the greater benefit they receive, not only with a training, but with the Jobs Plus Earned Income Disregard, which I'll review with you shortly. The Jobs Plus pilot program is looking to address poverty in public housing residents. It is incentivizing them through earned income disregards, as well as supportive services. We are able to help them in the areas listed here in the slide with regards to referring them to health care, child care, connections to employers, as well as community support and transportation. Community support for work includes something in the form of community coaches. So one of the designs of the program is essentially peer support. Individuals who live in the same neighborhood as our public housing authority sites where this pilot is being implemented will essentially serve as navigators, cheerleaders, encouragers, outreach workers to support those in their communities to enroll. They are working with their neighbors, and there's a belief that individuals will be more open to working with someone who they see regularly, someone who they're familiar with, somebody who looks like that them, represents them, that can guide them through the job readiness training process. You'll see that we're going to be very intentional with creating neighbor-to-neighbor and site-to-site support. This is taking place in five different public housing sites, and we're working to create communities within the site as well as across all of the five sites. There will also be social networking opportunities within the community where those going through the program have the ability to support one another, exchange information, and network. The job developments where the Jobs Plus pilot program is taking place are all in West Oakland. This is a place-based initiative. There's a belief that if individuals are able to have their employment, education, support needs met in one location that's close to their home, that they'll achieve greater success. And so we have jobs placed for families living in Campbell Village, Peralta Village, Chestnut Court, and Linden Court, as well as Mandela Gateway. And the Oakland Housing Authority is the only housing authority at this time that has received this grant that is facilitating it at non-contiguous sites. So the other grantees have all of their residents in the exact same location. While we are all in West Oakland, you see that our sites are throughout West Oakland. So there's a lot of interest in seeing how well we're going to do with this grant, with that design. The eligibility for participation, as I stated, is only for those who are public housing residents in West Oakland. The five sites are reviewed again here. In order for somebody to participate, they must be on the lease in something determined as good standing. They need to attend all the required workshops and training. And what's going to be really critical to their success is their motivation to put in the hard work required to get the job and to keep the job. Good standing is something that we do before providing supportive services to our families to ensure that essentially that they are in lease compliance. And this is checked prior to the individual's enrollment. We have had instances where someone has come to an orientation, they've expressed interest, we've reached out to their property administrator or property manager, and they have shared that perhaps this individual may owe some back rent to the housing authority. It has just created an opportunity for the Family and Community Partnerships Department to work with that property administrator to get this individual into what we call good standing so that they may progress with enrollment. The enrollment process is a simple one. We outreach and market the program, and individuals attend an orientation where they learn about it and what's required. Once someone expresses an interest, they will complete an assessment with the Family and Community Partnerships Department. We do have staff persons who are dedicated to this grant. The assessment will review with them any type of supportive services needs that they may have. They will also have an intake appointment is scheduled. One of our main partners with this grant is the Oakland Private Industry Council. The PIC is a nickname that we use for them. They support our families with job readiness, and they have a number of training sessions in their location at downtown Oakland. Individuals will also complete an assessment with the PIC, which is specific to their employment development plan. So this, again, is an overview of what we're calling Skilled Train Employment Pathways, or STEP. And it's just a review of what takes place when the individual meets with their PIC case manager. They have an assessment. They talk about their interests, their previous experience in the workplace, their educational attainment. They will have a customized employer training depending upon the area of an interest that a person states that they want to work in. The PIC case manager will make different recommendations. They'll go through employment literacy, digital literacy, making sure individuals know how to use the basic workplace software, computer, and other machines, things like Microsoft Office or email. And then they'll be determined at some point that they're ready to work. And they'll be connected to employers who have real jobs that are available right now, and they'll have the opportunity to be placed. This is just a graphic showing who focuses on what aspect of the enrollment and intake process and the various individual buckets that somebody could end up falling into. The top headers are who, and it has down the left-hand side of your slide who is completing that work. In the center has the what, and it shares with you what that work is. And then all the way over to the very right is the outcome, explaining what will occur. So, for example, if we start at the very top, it shares with you that the Oakland Housing Authority is going to complete an assessment with the family, with the resident, and then the outcome would be their enrollment. Once they move all the way through the process, you'll see at the bottom that some of the industries connected with the STEP program are technology, construction, retail services, as well as other industries that are emerging at this time. And we are partnering with various agencies that have training and connections to employers in each of these industries. We'll review later on in the PowerPoint. Individuals who enroll can receive paid employment training for up to 500 hours. And the training wage is based off of the wage of the actual position. So it could be anywhere from minimum wage up to as much as $35 an hour. And this is significant, as many families find it a barrier to training because they're very much needing to obtain income right away. And so the fact that they can receive paid employment training is very significant. Yes. You couple that with the supportive services, and it's going to remove a lot of barriers for individuals. So the earned income disregard, JPID. Oftentimes, when individuals try to achieve greater self-sufficiency, there's a disincentive for them to do that. Many support programs and subsidy programs are based off an individual's income. So if your income goes up, many times your services or support will go down. And it's been determined that sometimes that individuals feel it's not worth increasing their income because they're going to lose maybe food support or some other support that's necessary for their household. What the Jobs Plus Income Disregard does for those living in our public housing sites is it will essentially freeze their rent, and they're not receiving what's been determined as a disincentive for increasing their income. This is very significant, and it's the number one draw and incentive for this grant program with our families. Anyone who's 18 and older is eligible to receive this incentive, but each individual in the family must enroll separately in order for them to receive it. And it is going to freeze their earned income. So it's possible that a household could be receiving other income, and the disregard, however, is only going to be applied to their earned income. And they are eligible to receive it for the entire term of the grant, the entire 4 years, which is why we are very interested in ensuring that we enroll as many people as we can very early on, because they'll receive that greater length of benefit with having that earned income disregard. The goal is that it would allow them to apply the income to paying debts or to saving, to whatever it is that they choose to support their families. The Housing Authority is also required to support and enforce the community service requirement for those that live in public housing. They must contribute either 8 hours a month or 96 hours within a year period. And if they're participating in the Jobs Plus pilot program, it can satisfy this requirement for them. And so this is also significant for families who are not able to achieve the exemption for the community service requirement. Participating in the Jobs Plus grant would support them in multiple ways. The program administration, the headquarters for the Jobs Plus program is in West Oakland at 935 Union Street. It's there in our Resident Leadership Center. The hours are 9 to 5. There are also hours held at our various public housing sites, Mandela, Gateway, Campbell Village, Chestnut Linden Court, and those vary depending upon the site. There are staffing positions associated with the grant. There's an Assistant Director of Community and Economic Development, two Resident Community Service Coordinators. There's an office assistant who works part-time in the Resident Leadership Center, managing the calendar and the events that take place in the Jobs Plus headquarters, as well as community coaches, those individuals who are from the neighborhood, living in the neighborhood, who will go out and support and encourage those to enroll, as well as provide some follow-up and referrals for additional services for those who have already enrolled. We have partner case managers. I mentioned the Oakland Private Industry Council PIC. They will be supporting, they will be providing data entry into our own case management database system. So it's been put in like a web type of format to where they'll be able to log for us their enrollments, their trainings, their referrals, and that is what is allowing for us to keep track of all of the data and how our individuals were doing. We also have quarterly meetings with each of our partners. PIC is our main partner, but we also partner with the Social Services Agency, Youth Uprising. We have a number of others, and we get together quarterly and discuss the status of the grant, lessons learned, any things that we need to change with respect to referrals or the process flow. Again, the program offices are at Union Street, West Oakland for the Oakland Housing Authority, and the PIC's downtown office at 1212 Broadway. Each has open access hours for office and computers, as well as assessments and intakes to see our families. They each have their own case managers as well. This is a listing of resources that everyone who participates in the Jobs Plus program has access to. These are all should be very familiar to you, as they're the standard resources that the Family and Community Partnerships program offers. Everything from educational support to backpacks at the beginning of the school year, supporting with uniform help or getting a license for a job that they may need. We provide camps for youth over the summer, as well as access to everything that is within the FCP service department. As stated previously, PIC offers basic employment training and job placement. They have no-cost, short-term computer classes, which is very important for individuals to quickly have a win with being able to achieve some skills that isn't going to cost them anything for training. They'll have on-the-job training as well as GED classes, and employers have specific industry workshops. There's the standard mock interviews and on-site hiring programs as well. These are some of our community partners. Some of them may be new to you, so I'll just give you an overview of what they do. Silver LLC is an employer recruitment and liaison. They provide curriculum development for training and coordination of training and placement. Oaks Extreme is a company that provides retail services, specifically in restaurant and catering. So through the Jobs Plus program, they provide training to participants in food preparation, restaurant management, and health codes. They will also be offering employment opportunities upon completion of the training program. Tech Perfect is an IT training program for participants in basic computing, networking, and security, as well as troubleshooting and repair of computers. This is an industry where they've been encouraging any participants with reentry challenges to enroll. Pyramid Business Systems is a telecommunications company. They offer training in technical support and installation. They also have employment opportunities available upon the completion of training. And then Laney College is a partner offering vocational and technical training. PIC partners with them to locate classes on campus and co-enroll participants where they're able to earn community college credit as well as certificates or credentials for their field. Additionally, Berkeley City College and Merritt College are also partners for the training in fields such as healthcare and early childhood development. These are some questions that we've received from individuals who have come to our various orientations and workshops. They've been wanting to know what happens to their rent if there's a decrease in their income. And as we've assured them that it will not prevent their rent from decreasing when necessary. So there are times when an individual's income may change over time. Maybe their company has cut their hours. If it's been determined that they are due a decrease in rent, that can still take place for them while they're in the Jobs Plus program. Individuals have been curious about, well, what if I already have a job? Can I still participate in the Jobs Plus program? The answer is absolutely. We will support individuals if they perhaps want to promote within that position or gain additional skills or even change the field in which they're working in. They're also wanting to know if the employment opportunity is tied to the term of the grant. This is a question that we get often. And we assure that our families that these jobs and positions are real jobs that are not connected to the term of the grant. And even when the grant is over, that that employer may maintain that position.
And that's an important point, that because there's been a long history of employment programs that are funding positions that are tied to funding that is coming from a grant. The grant goes on for 18 months, and the people are out of work after the grant goes away. Yes. We're not trying to do that at all here. We don't have that kind of program. And I think there's a history, particularly in West Oakland, of that going on. And I just, so to the extent you are out among the community and they're asking about that, these are we want long-term employment in the private sector that are not at all tied to funding a job placement. And there are several names for that that we've used over the years. Sometimes the grant will fund a partial payment of the person's position.
That's correct, subsidize the employment.
Yeah, sometimes it's a earned or work experience grant at the end. They lose the money, they lose their job. Yeah. That's not these jobs.
And then finally, while the Jobs Plus Earned Income Disregard will expire at the 31st of December in 2019, we've identified and have confirmed with HUD that individuals can, after this, enroll in our Family Self-Sufficiency Program. And we know that the Family Self-Sufficiency Program supports you with earning escrow. And we essentially would be able to support individuals with having 9 years, if you would, of employment support and services by being able to combine the participation in both of the programs. They can't do them at the exact same time, but they can certainly choose to begin one at the conclusion of the other. And we've been encouraging that. And it's interesting, individuals will literally do the math to find out which one is going to be more beneficial to them with looking to see which one they want to sign up for. And we're okay with that. So long as they're participating and they're moving forward, we absolutely support that with them.
So when the Jobs Plus Earned Income Disregard, JPEID, expires on December 31st of 2019, what plan do we have for those families who've been enrolled?
So we'll be starting to work with them prior to the end of the term of the grant and doing another assessment with them and identifying what it is that they're desiring to do. The intent is to believe that they should be in a position to where they can afford their rent at that time, because that disregard will disappear. And they would have taken the 3 years, 2 years, whatever time that they've been in it thus far to have gotten their financial house in order, if you would, and as well as gotten well on their way for various job training. We will also at that time assess if there's a different program that they're looking to transfer into that could benefit them. For example, family self-sufficiency, which would allow them to earn escrow. They would still pay the rent at their current income, but at the conclusion of those 5 years, could receive a check cut to them, at which point they could choose what they wanted to do with those funds.
Okay.
So here's some information on current enrollment. From July through September, through the current, September hasn't come yet, we've enrolled 58 individuals in the Jobs Plus program, which is extraordinary in our minds because we've literally have just started. And for the first year, our target was 75. And so we are already at 77% of our first year's target, and we've got less than 60 days in. And so we're very...
That's great.
So we're very optimistic that we will be able to meet our goals, and we're not going to just stop at the 75. We're looking to enroll as many as we can, as soon as we can, so they can get the full benefit of the JPID. You'll also see at the bottom there, we've just given you some demographics of where these individuals are coming from. So we've shared with you the total number of residents at a site, and then we've told you the total number of Jobs Plus program eligible residents at a site.
So what makes them Jobs Plus program eligible as opposed to the rest of the population?
So glad that you asked. And so the NOFA, the grant requirement, let us know that you had to, of course, be in a public housing. Some of these sites are mixed finance sites, so they'll have public housing and tax credit, so we can't count those individuals who are living in those other units. And if you're concerned or worried that the other people in those sites who aren't public housing can't receive the services, I want to assure you that they can still be referred to the PIC, they can still go through the STEP program, they can still access services with our Family and Community Partnerships Department. They will not be able to earn the jobs plus earned income disregard, but we can certainly support them through their employment and other self-sufficiency goals.
And certainly family self-sufficiency for Section 8 participants is great.
That's correct. So what HUD required at the time we applied for the grant is that the development have a minimum development size of 200 non-elderly only households. And so that just means households where there was at least one resident under the age of 65. The other condition that needed to be met was that at least 50% of the households, excluding the elderly only households, contained no member showing earned income in PIC. And so we had to strategically...
And PIC is the information system that we report income to HUD on. So it's PIC, PIC.
Oh, thank you. So we have basically taken out all of the individuals that HUD says are not eligible to participate, and this number of JPP eligible residents is what is left. And then you can see which percentage of the site that is. For example, Peralta Villa, 52% of the job... 50. Of those who are jobs plus eligible, that makes up 52% of the site.
So what's interesting about our grant is HUD has never awarded a grant to a non-contiguous site for the first ones out of the gate. The other thing that we are first on is we're the first to include mixed finance, mixed income communities. So part of our puzzle was what Lenita was sharing is how can we serve everybody and not really turn people away? What do we have for the people who aren't in public housing, are in project-based Section 8 or in tax credits, can we assist? And our partners can. They're eligible, so we just can funnel them that way. It's not the full range of the program. The main crux of the Jobs Plus program is, for us, we really think, but in general, is to try and remove the barriers to employment that our residents have. And one of the things we know about our employment market, and I think it's directly related to the cost of housing and lack of availability for people to live and work, is that we have actually a really low unemployment rate. By some people's definition, it's at net zero. It's below 3% in the region because they can't get people to fill jobs because people can't afford to live here. And what we do is we have a population that is in assisted housing that can afford to live here. So we're really excited about trying to get them through the barriers that they need to access the jobs that we're talking about. Yes. And we're really doing, this is sort of the deep dive analysis. This is trying to get people who really do have severe barriers toward employment, working with them over the term of the grant to remove those barriers, because the PIC is able to deliver jobs at the end if they're able to remove the barriers to get themselves ready to work. And that, I think, is our grant. And the more we've talked about it, the more we realize we're going to be the let's remove that barrier grant more than anything. HUD is going to watch us very, very closely because of the non-contiguous sites and how we deliver programs that way. And they're going to watch us very closely about how we create a community that supports work within a mixed income community. That is where their grant is only targeting one population. I've been very vocal with HUD saying that they need to change their grant and let it serve everybody at a site, regardless of their subsidy source, so that it would include everyone. And they're open to the idea. It's just they have a lot of public housing communities that desperately need this grant, so they're reluctant, I think, to move too quickly in that direction.
Wonderful.
We are currently serving 14% of all families that are eligible to participate in the Jobs Plus program. So these are some employment statistics. And as stated before, that an individual can be working at the time that they enroll in the program. We currently have, at the outset, there were 33 individuals who were unemployed, 15 who had part-time employment, and 10 who were employed full-time. The slide on the bottom represents the number of individuals who are experiencing various barriers. And it is possible that somebody could have more than one. I'd like to highlight transportation, as well as lack of computer or internet access. and those who are having challenges with the basic needs such as clothing, as well as those who don't bank. There are some financial literacy supports that we're looking to make sure that we provide for our families. And then this is a brief overview of those who have enrolled and the types of training that they're in at this time. There are currently 12 individuals who have enrolled into training. JRT represents job readiness training, and CET represents a customized employer training. So that means that they're working with someone in something employer-specific, a targeted industry. And what I would like to do now is to invite Petraeo Smith to come and to share with you about the types of places where people have been employed, as well as the youth component. The Jobs Plus program has a youth component.
Great.
Good evening. I'm Petraeo Smith, a resident community services coordinator. As Lenita stated before, many of our participants are unemployed at the start of the Jobs Plus program, but some of them are working part-time or full-time. Many of our participants are actually employed through in-home supportive services through the county, providing caregiving services either privately or to a member of their family. Some have also been employed through temp agencies and security services, food service, and we have a couple of people who actually work as teachers or teacher aides with the Oakland Unified School District, as well as Head Start. And post-enrollment, we have had six people who have become employed. One person is employed by the post office. We've had three people who were actually hired by Safeway. The Oakland PIC had a hiring event last week, and the Safeway on 51st and Broadway is going to be reopening. So they did a large hiring event, and many of our participants went, and three were actually hired on the spot. They're going to be working in the deli, the bakery, or as a cashier. We also had our youngest Jobs Plus participant who was able to participate in the Classroom to Career Summer Employment Program, and so he was hired through YEP, Youth Employment Partnership, and we have one person who was actually rehired by her old employer in the fast food industry. So we have had some gains since the launch of the program in this short amount of time. Oakland Housing Authority also had the opportunity to partner with Youth Uprising for a youth program called the Youth Participatory Action Research Project. Through this program, 13 youth who recently graduated from McClymonds High School were hired through the City of Oakland Summer Employment Program as researchers. And they completed a 5-week research program where they were able to research pressing issues that were affecting the community. And we utilized this research program to survey people who live at the public housing sites who are eligible for the Jobs Plus program. Through the program, the youth were able to develop their own research questions and create a survey in order to go door to door to some of the public housing sites and ask participants kind of their employment status and the things that have been a barrier for them to become employed. The youth visited Peralta Villa, Campbell Village, and Chestnut and Linden Court. They were unable to go to Mandela Gateway just because of timing and transportation. 131 surveys were completed, and they were found that about 50% of the people were employed and 50% of the people were unemployed. Some of the survey questions were, again, regarding barriers to employment, how people are able to actually learn about employment opportunities, and people's primary transportation method. Through the program, youth were able to gain communication skills, skills in report writing and in research, how to design a research template, utilizing Microsoft Excel, and as well as the desire for them to learn about the community in West Oakland, and also gaining the desire to want to give back to the community in West Oakland. The youth are actually college bound, so the program was very short because they were getting ready to start school, and they were able to generate a report from it and give us a lot of insight as to the different things that are keeping our families from being able to become employed and what methods or steps that we can take in order to support our families best.
Thank you. We've included that in your packet.
Yes.
Because I was just so impressed that we use summer youth employment at this level to value our youth, and you can take this challenge on, develop what you're going to ask, do the surveys, roll up the data, produce your own report. They then reported back to us a couple weeks ago. So they then had to present back to OHA their findings and report, and I just thought it was one of the more significant things I've seen us accomplish, small but important. And not only is it important for the youth who undertook this project, because they'll carry this with them and talk about how they designed and implemented a study. But I thought it was also really informative to our Jobs Plus program. It's very useful, important information that we can use to build a program around. And I was enormously pleased and proud of everyone for kind of stepping up, including FCP and Youth Uprising, to make this happen. I thought it was one of the most interesting things we've done with summer youth employment ever. So I wanted to make sure that we shared it. Thank you, Patria.
That concludes our presentation, and we're more than happy to entertain any questions you may have.
Okay. You go. No, let's you go. Commissioner Hurd, go right ahead.
Okay. Oh my God, this is, Ms. Willard, thank you. This is just awesome. And what a great way to make a difference in our community in helping residents come out of poverty. And this is a start, and I commend you all for taking the step. So a couple questions, and you know I normally have some. Okay. So, I'm just excited. Okay, so one of my questions is, okay. The people with felony or misdemeanors, 15 with challenges, how are we helping them? Because I know that's a really big thing. And that's a really hard part in trying to get them employed when they have those challenges. What are we doing to help them in that area?
There are some instances in where we're connecting them to employment to where that employer has identified that's not a challenge or barrier for them.
Okay.
We also work with individuals on being able to discuss and address. It's unique person by person a situation and what that is on the record.
Okay.
One of the trainings that they can go through is how to talk about how to answer the tough questions.
Okay.
But the PIC, as well as its partners, have worked very hard with putting together the various trainings and identifying the employers who are willing to work with individuals who may have these challenges in their background.
Okay, great. Okay, my other question, let's see, it says that they need to be a part of community service, and does OHA pick that, or how do they get a part? How do they be a part of that?
So for the public housing families who are required to participate in the community service requirement, it's not a requirement of Jobs Plus.
Okay.
This is separate. If that is something that's applicable to one of our public housing families, they can satisfy that through Jobs Plus.
Okay.
They don't have to, and they families can decide where they would like to complete that community service.
Okay.
And the Family and Community Partnerships Department has a list of suggested locations for people, things like maybe there's children's school, or if there's opportunities at the Family and Community Partnerships. But it is something where individuals can self-select.
Okay, thank you. Two more questions. Thank you for being patient here. Okay, it talked about clothing and some challenges there. Now, I know we have a partnership with Wardrobe for Opportunity, and I've gone through that program, and they have great clothes. They have really good clothes. So is that something we're going to take more advantage of with a WFO?
Yes, they are a continued partner of ours, okay. And for those who make it through the employment process, the interview process, we can refer them to Wardrobe for Opportunity, okay. If they're eligible through that program. Uh-huh. We also have other ways in which we support our families with uniform support, clothing support. Okay. If it's clothing for children and there's a uniform required for school, uh-huh. We do have a partner who provides those uniforms for a number of schools throughout the Bay Area. Okay. We've also supported families with being able to purchase clothing at maybe a Kohl's or an Old Navy or some place like that through okay. The support of a gift card.
Okay, that's good. And my last question, thank you, Ms. Wheeler. My last question, I'm really glad to hear that the grant funds, if they get a job, if the grant funds in, they still have a job. Okay, and I only say that because that happened to me, that mm-hmm. Our employer grant ended and I got laid off. So that's important. It's important that they get a job and the grant money is not tied to their employment. So I'm really glad to hear that won't happen to our residents. So that's all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm done.
Commissioner Castillo.
I, too, am quite impressed with this project. You yes. guys, as usual, the amount of time yes. and energy and thoughtfulness and, mm-hmm. and direct action is always what I'm impressed yes. with. This is amazing.
Right.
I mean, I think I wanted to make sure Commissioner Hurd spoke first because she always has, like, the same questions that I have. I was curious that there's no breakdown of the funding. How are we going to spend this? Is when you say... Are we paying anything towards the wages? I don't think so, right? So where
No, it's unsubsidized employment.
Correct. So where is the money being spent in this project?
So the grant fund budget, and I apologize for omitting that slide with letting you know the breakdown, it will cover staffing costs for both OHA and the PINC.
Okay.
It also covers the actual supportive services. We have a match through the Oakland Housing Authority. It can help them with paying for, like, their, if they need a license at the DMV.
Right.
It can help them with paying for the transportation cards. We also have funds in there for travel. There's an annual conference that takes place for Jobs Plus. We also have funds in there for modifying our case management database system, which was required to add a module, a Jobs Plus module, to our case management database system. I'm trying to recall off the top of my head.
And the PIC we awarded the contract to
yes.
This past spring, the PIC's contract is actually a performance-based contract. So they get paid at the end basically different points, but the main one is to get the 180 yes. days retention into a
full-time
unsubsidized employment.
Very good.
And that's where a good chunk of the money is going, is the work that they're doing to get us there.
And then our five community service folks that are located.
Community coaches.
They go straight to the sites, right?
Yes, and those directly. Community coaches, so you know, are funded through the grant.
Right, and they are actually our residents who mm-hmm. get funded through the grant.
And but they don't work full-time. They work assisting with outreach and case management. So what the idea with Jobs Plus originally is to try and create a community that supports work.
Yes.
Not just an employment center that supports work, a community that supports work. And that involves meeting people at their times, and that community coaches can very much help that. They know how to access the resources. They will check in with participants who are working. They'll have their caseload and they're checking into during the week, and it can be in the evenings, it can be on Saturdays, when the person's available. And I think that helps to have that network into each one of these developments, so that we can, again, reach the people when we need to reach them. And if you're working, if you are only available Saturday at 10 o'clock, our community coaches can do that.
Nurturing our Comcast relationship to address the computer and internet needs of our folks.
We have done that.
Jobs
it's on
Plus
my report.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about your kickoff event and Campbell?
The date escapes me, but we did have a partnership with Comcast, and they
I can rescue the date and everything else. On July 21st, Comcast Company partnered with OHA to launch its low-cost Internet Essentials program for public housing families at Campbell Village, which is the Jobs Plus site. 35 residents received Dell laptops on that day. we were given about 150, I think, right?
Yes.
And that we've used. Comcast donated a total, 151 laptops to public housing families, 8 desktop computers to upgrade the computer lab as well in the center, which I'm not sure if they're, are they installed
they
yet?
They are there. They
oh,
are
very
there.
Good. Thank yes. you, Terry. Thank you, Lenita.
Sean Johnson did
and
them.
Sean Johnson, thank you. And then we also used, some of the laptops were used as incentives to bring people into the Jobs Plus Center when we had the kickoff, which was Peralta's back to school event.
Yes.
And so we part with the backpack and the back to school
no,
event.
No, I heard it. That was fabulous. But is there a continuing of addressing the technical, you know, the needs of the families as we move forward into the program? Is there a way for us to, you know, give a family who is in the Jobs Plus program a computer because they don't have internet access? You know what I'm saying?
We do have partnerships with, excuse me, I didn't mean to cut you off. We do have partnerships still with OTX West. They have the program where individuals can obtain refurbished computers with them. There's
yeah.
still the low-cost internet provider service through either Comcast or another company that they can determine and decide. But yes, we do have ongoing support of our families
Good.
To get continued education and access to computers.
And the reason that the Comcast did the big kickoff that they've done in a couple sites, including ours, Internet Essentials is a new system. It used to only be available for families with a certain range of children in school. It's now available to any public housing family, period.
I like that.
And assisted family, actually HUD assisted family. It's $9.95 a month.
Yes.
It's, you know, cable internet, and we'll be doing more outreach, and I think we'll put it in our newsletter. It's coming out that you can call and sign up. So the senior sites, the family sites, everyone can get it. It's a, you know, internet is just really expensive, and you
True.
Can't
yes.
function without it.
Yes.
Yes.
Wonderful.
What I would love to hear more when we talk about our partners is livable wage. I know you start at $12.55. That would be a good wage if there's more than one employer in the house, you know, that there's like several people working. But if we're talking about self-sufficiency, the lower end of that spectrum just doesn't really do it. So are we kind of pushing our livable wage jobs out through PIC, that we're also not just paying them for getting someone a job, but also the value and the quality of that job also? Like, are there connections to the really big time workers like AC Transit, Edmund, BART? I mean, are we pushing our babies to right self-sufficiency?
Sure, we've partnered with the PIC, and the STEP program connects individuals to the various emerging fields, you know, technology, those that have been identified in a number of economic reports.
Like biotech also.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That is one of them. What they do is they really individualize the plan for the person who's going through the program.
Right.
And so they absolutely ascribe to the livable wage philosophy. We are identifying and finding through some of our assessments that some of our families are not yet there yet. They may still
right.
be needing their GED. Mm-hmm. They have other challenges. We're identifying that prior to even being ready to go to job training, some of our families have basic needs even before that. And so we are absolutely focusing on livable wage, but we're also addressing some of the realities of individuals who need to work up to that.
And we have a lot of possible participants who have not worked in some time.
That's correct.
Very good. And health field also, I know it's mentioned in here, but that's also one of the growing fields that just does not have enough workers in it.
Mm-hmm.
This is very, very good. And I love that we have 55 enrolled. That's great. What's happening at Mandela Gateway? There's only one. Are we going to, like, really push it out there? Do you know what happened there? Because we only have one person signed up.
That's correct. We're going to push it out to all of our sites. We expected some of our mixed finance sites to not respond as quickly as some that are public housing only, just due to the culture of that site. And so we are partnering very closely with the resident community service coordinators that are there, that are located there. It's also a smaller site
mm-hmm.
to where there's less people eligible to participate. But we're only not
it,
even it, 2 months
mean,
in.
And for Mandela, it's a smaller public housing
That's
population.
Correct.
And are most of them seniors or disabled or anything like that? Is there
I don't,
like
I think we have working families there. I don't remember what the mix is off the the top of my
head. So it could be like there could be some significant barriers.
We'd have to research that. We've been pleasantly surprised. We have had some individuals come out who are older than 62 who wanted to participate, and we've advocated, but HUD's very clear that that is their cutoff number.
Oh, I see. Thank you so much. And I so appreciate this really beautiful presentation. Will this now turn into reports within our monthly reports? So
it
that
won't
we can
be
know?
Monthly. We'll probably, because the grant reports biannually.
Okay.
So we'll probably put something biannually. Monthly you'll get updates, but it won't be the full report. We'll just wait. And what we'll do is roll in the full report in 6 months. It'll probably be in February's packet.
I just mean like it'll be like a paragraph inside of
that you currently get. Yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah.
For the last several months, we've been reporting it in the monthly report, and we're tracking enrollments and people who've gone to training. You'll see that regularly.
I'm just really excited about making, like our Commissioner Hurd says, we're making a difference on another level. The last thing I want to talk about was actually the results from our survey. On page 7, what's really interesting is that half of the people said, yes, a job will positively impact our health, but then 45 of the people said, no, it won't. You know, it might hurt health, and that's very interesting. And for me, on my perspective, it's like absolutely a job is stressful. And if you don't have the tools that you need in order to deal with the folks that you work with, or there's unaddressed issues in the family, a job does become very stressful for you, or you're working long hours and you're only getting paid $8 an hour. Mm-hmm. So was there any deeper, was this just a yes or no, or was there some deeper data behind this?
When the youth came and provided the presentation to us, they did let us know a lot of our families that they did survey were disabled or receiving some sort of income because of their disability, and that was a concern. When becoming employed, that those benefits would be reduced.
Right.
Perhaps our families have some reservations about their health being impacted due to a loss of a benefit, or them maybe not being eligible for certain things due to just the lack of information around employment and what would be available to them. I know that one of our barriers that's huge with our participants that are currently enrolled is the lack of childcare. And so that could also be something that could also, again, contribute to the level of stress that our participants have with trying to figure out, you know, how they're able to provide for their families and also have adequate care for their children while they're working.
I really appreciate that, because I know that there's so much story behind this particular graft, and I just wanted to be able to put it on the record that it's significant barriers that exist, and choosing to get a job, you have to give up something else, and so I just wanted to bring that to light, and thank you so much for this presentation, and let's do the work now. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay, Commissioner Montgomery.
Yeah, I just have one comment. I like on the back, West Oakland going to work. That's the best part. Yeah, I think you did a wonderful job. I was just concerned a little bit about the 44% of the transportation. I don't know too many jobs in West Oakland where they can walk to work, so That's a barrier, isn't it? So,
yes.
Mm-hmm. So what do you? Because a lot of them don't have cars, huh? Is that? So what's the approach?
In the research project that the youth did, a lot of our families indicated that they utilize cars, whether they're getting rides from other people or driving themselves to work. One of the major barriers indicated in the survey that kind of goes hand in hand with the lack of transportation is just the location of the employment opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So people not really being able to, you know, go out too far in order to be, you know, get an employment opportunity. We're currently supporting our enrolled participants with transportation. During the assessment process, we're asking our participants, what's your preferred method of transportation? How do you kind of get around? And so we are able to support our families with Clipper cards, bus passes, and also gas cards for them to be able to not only look for employment, but once they become employed, have the means to get to work. And so we do have funding set aside in order to support our families with transportation.
And also, in your conclusions, 50% of the residents were employed, 50% are not. And most of the residents got their jobs through friends.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The community support. And that was very impressive, you know, that talking to friends and finding out where friends work. And I think the survey was very informative. Because, you know, it let you know that the residents do communicate and they do have friends, you know. So this was very, 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 very good information. So I just want to commend you because I live in West Oakland. I'm just glad to know that. And 35 out of Canberra Village, that's amazing. And that's very good. Someone did some real good work there.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I can appreciate that because I know where I've know where Campbell Village is, and I'm down there a lot, so I can really thank you for that. And I can tell different people that, hey, that many people are working out of Campbell Village, and that's very good. So thank you.
Commissioner Lee.
I'll echo the other commissioners in that it's a great presentation from all of you, and I also appreciate the thoughtfulness in how this program was put together. My question is around the outreach, and just as Commissioner Montgomery has said, 35 residents out of Campbell Village, out of a smaller population that was eligible, is really impressive. So just wondering if with some of the other buildings, are more people employed at Mandela Gateway and Chestnut and Linden Court? Is that a barrier? It was really wonderful news to hear that so many people were employed so quickly, were hired by Safeway and the post office and other places. So I imagine the buzz is going to grow and that will...
And that's the saturation. When you say you want to saturate a community with work, that's what you want to try and saturate, and the first jobs. I think the reason that Campbell Village had the higher numbers is because we focused, the Comcast event was there. We were able to enroll people. We were giving
were
away the computers.
Were those the 35 who got the computers?
A good chunk of them.
Okay.
And we also have a very good resident working in the community, Erica Parker, that really has been a good baritone for why you should join this program, and she's a terrific success story on her own without Jobs Plus, so she brings a level of personal experiencing to it.
It's a special weapon.
But creating that at the other sites is the goal. And we just had, you know, a week ago Friday, the Peralta kickoff.
That's right.
So we're just starting there, and then we've got to go to Chestnut, Linden, and Mandela still.
Yeah. Wow. So just wonderful work. Looking forward to hearing more progress. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very good job.
Thank you.
Well, I had one question on the income disregard. So this really comes at two levels. So one is that if someone joins this program in 2019, whenever in 2019, they're going to lose that income disregard at the end of the year when the program ends, is that correct?
Yes.
So the disregard would not be as valuable to later term entrants?
No, the earlier you can enroll people, right, which is why we're pushing, the longer they have with their income disregard, and then what we're hoping at the end, they'll transition to family self-sufficiency. So they'll start paying the higher rent based on 30%, but then any increases in wages beyond that will go into an escrow account for up to 5 years. So if they continue to have wage progression, they can still build family self-sufficiency, build the escrow account, which they can use for a number of things, including home ownership.
Oh, okay, because that starts to get into my next question related to this, because one of the things that I am always generally concerned about is that it's, I mean, I would love to see Oakland Housing Authority subtly be perceived and actually be an economic engine for the city. I mean, where we have, you know, people are really getting employed and really, you know, and contributing to the city. But the downside of that is that if people start making enough money that they're actually graduating from subsidized housing, there's quite an abyss that they're going to fall into during that period. So where there really just aren't any, there's just nothing available at reasonable prices. So you know, I'm always worried about people being forced to ultimately move out of the community simply because the rents are just so high. And as we've had some discussions before about the need for more of that intermediate housing,
well,
you know, so that there are some bridges for that. So I just kind of wanted to, you know, toss that into the heap so that that's not something that we ever lose sight of. And because I don't know what kinds of things we might be able to do to make those situations less onerous, but there may be some things that we could do.
So for public housing, so you know, they get to the flat or ceiling rent. They're not required at this point to move. There are proposals in Washington to put limits and kick people out after certain, and I opine that we don't agree with that,
right.
Partially because what you're talking about, talking to neighbors and getting job referrals. If you want to create a healthy community, it has people at all income levels, and the networks work. So if you have people at Lockwood that are working, and I say this often, at Southwest Airlines, mm-hmm. and they're walking down the street, and they say, oh, Michael, yeah, I wish I could work. Well, you know, here's who you call, because there's an opening right now in this area. Mm-hmm. That's how people really get jobs now.
That's right.
What they're trying to do when they say that public housing sites should not have anyone making over a certain amount of money there, they're denying that. They're taking that out of that resource away from everybody else.
Yes.
We don't really have a huge number of over-income families or anything that it would matter, but it matters to me on a policy level. I think that's the wrong policy. Having communities like Mandela, where you have different levels, you have then you do have what you're talking about,
right?
Because you have tax credit units, but the public housing families in this grant can currently live in public housing as their wage goes up. They'll end up paying a flat or a what we see as our market rent.
Yes.
In Section 8, they get to zero HAP. So then they can stay on zero HAP for 24 months, and then they're off the program. That makes a lot of people nervous. We've doubled the time that HUD usually allows because you worry. You know, if you then lose your job, how are you going to be able to pay rent if you don't have the protection of the program behind you that can help you assist?
Yes.
Those are all risks and dangers for families in our program. But for public housing families, they don't have to move at this point.
Well, good. Well, thank you. And this is really a great project, a splendid presentation. And this is what the world needs more of. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we're going. Oh, we are on to item
C.
There, and we
recognition
have no
of people wishing to address the commission.
Yes, we have no speaker.
There
cards.
Are no speaker
I believe
cards.
I have none. You have none. No one's asking to speak. So,
so we'll move on.
So we will move on then to written communications.
Written communications includes the monthly report, which we're here to for any questions. I'll just highlight a couple things, including two letters I handed out before the meeting that didn't make the packet. First is a summary from Mark Schifferl, our Director of Property Management, OPO, on National Night Out. It's a terrific effort, and Mark, along with OHAPD, along with Family and Community Partnerships, all get together to throw a number of great activities throughout the city, and I'm grateful for them all. This is his report. I also just want to mention that Omar Ronquillo is really a hard worker and a great guy, and really helped, I think, pull all this together for everyone this year. And I just was able to get out and thank him, and I see him occasionally around town, and thinks he's on our site intervention team with Mark, and he's doing a terrific job. But he was he put the map together. He knew everyone at every site this year and really did a great job. And our officers were terrific at all the sites, and Mark's staff as well were barbecuing up, and I just thought it was great. Thank you. We have then our usual meeting schedule. The two letters I added, one was just, these are electronic comments that were submitted. The first letter is from OHA directly on small area fair market rent that is out in case you hear about it. We also got together with all of the housing authorities in the East Bay to that are impacted by this, the Oakland-Fremont metropolitan area, to opine together as well. It's something we don't, it's not a bad idea. What we don't like is it's mandatory for our area. We can project based on their data that there would be rent reductions in some of our neighborhoods, which would disincentivize landlords for participation, could impact families negatively. So we've taken a pretty direct stance on a couple things. It shouldn't be mandatory being number one. But the letters are there, so you'll know our positions on it. And that's our written communications. And just dovetailing into item eight, which is my report, I will read some of this as in written communications, but I wanted to highlight it. First, I just really want to thank OHAPD, OPO, and FCP again for all of the summer activities they did this summer, particularly OHAPD for the field trips and building the bridges to our teenagers throughout the summer. It really makes a difference. It makes a difference for years to come, and I regret that they didn't do bike trips and I didn't go on them, but they did bowling trips and everything else in the world this year, and it did a terrific job and kept everyone busy. And, you know, the other thing that I like to point out about that, having those activities, not only we started it for different reasons, you know, to build a bridge, to make sure that the officers had an individual relationship and with our residents, and the residents learn not to fear our officers and all those kind of good things. What is also true, though, is the youth who participate in activities during the summer have less summer learning loss than those who don't. So it actually plays into education as well. If that activity is going fishing, if that activity is going to the zoo, whatever those activities are, diminish the amount of learning loss that the children experience during the summer break. And I think it's important in a number of ways. We just recently had the back to school Peralta and Lockwood was last Friday, block parties, and they were terrific successes. Lockwood started it all with get out of school day at the first of the summer, and now we do the back to school and we do the backpacks. I also, a couple highlights from the report that you may not have caught, but on July 14th, Lockwood Garden Summer Youth Program hosted a family reading celebration for National Summer Learning Day, where they had 36 children, parents, and grandmothers participating in the community building event. Children read aloud to each other, and the parents and grandmothers read to the children. I think that's great. So, I mentioned Comcast. Also, an effort to address challenges that the families face when they're finding and leasing units, leased housing and family and community partnership departments are working together to develop housing search assistance workshops. The goal is to assist voucher holders who have not been successful in leasing a unit to identify barriers such as credit issues, security deposits, and you know, and whatever barriers they're having, and help them present and sell themselves as tenants, because that's what's required in this market and it's so challenging. They, on July 8th, they hosted a community event where they had a roundtable from different organizations we work with, including Catholic Charities, Eden, INR, Oakland Housing Assistance Center, and First Searchers Assistance Workshop is scheduled for August 18th, so it actually went on last week, and I think that's part of the small things we can do to better prepare our tenants, our participants in the program, to go out and represent themselves as good tenants and hopefully lock down some units. And I know a couple of you had mentioned, are we doing that? And I just wanted to highlight that, yes, Michelle and Lenita are actively trying to work together to put that program together, and I'm grateful for it. Other big news, on July 8th, we did issue two RFQs. So they're both on the street for, one is for project-basing existing units onto the project-based program. The other one is for creating an operating subsidy agreement or an operating agreement with SROs. So we've never done SROs. It's going to be an interesting ride to figure this out. There are two deadlines. We do round one and a round two. So the round one is due September 24th, and round two is due October 26th. So we're giving everyone a really long time to figure out what will work. We've had the bidders conference. It was well attended. We've had a list of questions in the final draft I've got to go review tonight, but we're going to get that out shortly. Really interesting and good questions related to specific properties, but these are for existing units. And what we're hoping is to put some of our vouchers to work to help some families. People will voucher in place. So the people living in the units, if they do this, will be able to join the program and help them with their rent burdens. And I think that's also very good at preserving Oakland. The other thing Leased Housing is starting to do, they begin the process of purging their 2011 wait list, which is contacting, having everyone contacted on the wait list, seeing if they're still around, seeing if they're still interested in verifying their information. So that's going on in this fall as well. We want to see if we have to open up our wait list and which ones and when. So we'll be working on that. There'll be a couple of wait lists that are opening. And we will always, as always, keep you informed of when those are, and I'll make sure you're aware of them. We're going to open them separately. So there'll be probably public housing, and then there'll be OPI opening up. We're not going to have the same, do them at the same time. It gets too confusing to people, so we want to separate them out. So people will know what they're applying for, and there won't be questions about that. And that should be in the fall of this year. And another just update of questions that I think some of you have asked for updates on. In July 16, Leased Housing has invited 55 Shelter Plus Care tenant-based rental assistance TRAs clients for eligibility screening for acceptance into the Housing Choice Voucher Program. So this was the action we took to help unclog the Shelter Plus Care program, to move people who've been in that program, some since 2000, so for 16 years, really aren't getting, don't need the services they're living, but we made a path for them onto the regular Housing Choice Voucher Program, thus freeing up the Shelter Plus Care with services for someone who can more, who's more in need of it. To date, 35 households have passed eligibility, 25 have attended a briefing. So we're getting there. We've started the unplugging, and hopefully that will have residual effects throughout our neighborhoods as we continue to do that. On August 16th, OHA hosted two Senate Transportation, Housing, Urban Development, THUD, Senate Appropriations members, along with three HUD senior staff who do their budget. They were in California visiting certain agencies, and we were chosen as one in the afternoon. We gave them a tour of some of our development activities. We talked mostly about how we use MTW to facilitate that, and then came back and talked about some of our landlord incentives and some of our RFQs and things that we're doing differently here. I thought it went very well. I've never had them come visit in all of my years doing this, so I didn't really know what to expect, but they apparently do it a couple times a year. They pick different areas, and housing's such a crisis in this country that they picked housing, and they came to California because we're basically the epicenter, I think, of the crisis. It's a lot of work to host anybody, and I want to thank all the staff, and particularly Patricia Wells, for helping coordinate the visit and making it go well. On the same note, we are having a visit from Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary Lourdes Castro-Ramirez, who's coming on August 24th, and we have a very busy day of meetings. Hopefully a couple of you will be able to come by, I think, at lunch and join us, but it's we're having conversations. We gave her a list of things that we could do, and she's picked five of them for the day, so it's going to be a busy day, but I'm looking forward to it. And that is all my announcements.
Okay, so what do we have now? Now we have reports of commission committees. I don't believe we had any meetings, did we?
Not this time, Chair.
No. So then the final item then would be announcements by commissioners.
Yes.
Any announcements? Anyone have any announcements to make?
You do. Commissioner Hurd does.
Yes,
I do.
We're doing announcements by commissioners.
Good.
Okay, Commissioner.
Please bear with me. Let me just say how much I love this work. And OHA has changed my life, giving me a voucher, bringing me out of homelessness. And I want to say to staff, I love you all. Thank you for the work you do to help our residents and to help them be empowered, to help them realize that they're worth, and to allow them to know that we're there to support them. So let me just go through my announcements real quick. So I wasn't here last month. I attended the NARL conference, and Ms. Wells was here with me. And some of the workshops I attended, I was so inspired by them. One of the workshops, I believe Ms. Wells was in there with me, is one called Conversations Over Pizza. Remember Ms. Wells? And this one talked about building relationships, encouraging dialogue, finding solutions together. And I think we did something like this here. Didn't we do something like this? The chief did? Okay, but I was so inspired by what they said in this that I brought it back and just wanted to share it with our board of commissioners. The other thing I wanted to talk about is at the NARL conference, a lot of the focus talked about homelessness, okay, and what are their issues? The March, April 26th issue, new directions and opportunities for ending homelessness. Sounds like it's something that we can't do, but it is. It really is. And I brought these back, and I shared them with the residents at the RAP. So I didn't have any left for the commissioners. But can we get some of these for the commissioners? They can read the story. Okay, the story is very powerful in here. Yeah, the story is very powerful. Okay, a couple more points. Also, at the NARL conference, they had a lot of housing authorities winning awards around homelessness. And again, I was very inspired as someone who has come out of that and looking at how housing authorities are stepping up to the plate to address that. Also, while at the NARL conference, I brought back the California Association of Housing Authorities legislative focus for 2016, and I gave all the commissioners one of these so that you know what they're focusing on. And another thing that we received, Lisa Baker with the YOLO Housing Authority, she did a workshop. And one of the things that we got is a calendar, and it's an alumni calendar, and it talks about residents that are off their wait list now doing things in their community, and they spotlighted them in a calendar. I thought that was so cool, so I brought that back to share with all of us. And let's see, two more points. I ended up meeting briefly with Tracy Corder. She is the field director of Oakland Rising. Doesn't that sound wonderful? Oakland Rising. Don't you love the sound of that? Oakland Rising. We are rising. And what Tracy does, they go out to make sure that residents are registered to vote. And I shared that with Benita and Sean. And I believe she was able to attend one of our events. Is that correct? Ms. Wheeler, did she attend one of our events? I think she did. She did? Okay. Great, great organization, Oakland Rising. And one more thing. Okay, so at the conference, one of the keynote speakers, Stacy Bees, and thank you, Ms. Wells, for this book. This is so wonderful. What she does, she teaches in a school with no name, and she teaches children who are homeless. And can you imagine that, going into a school and teaching children who don't have a home? This is what she does. And so I got a copy of the book, thanks to Ms. Wells, and very inspired by her story of how she leads. And the last thing I wanted to mention is, Wes, and forgive me for my emotionalness, but I love what I do. I love this work. And if I get emotional, it's because we're making a difference. And when I travel around the states and I see the other housing authorities, they're doing the same thing. So I applaud you guys for helping us help our residents. The last thing I wanted to show is there is a video that I was sent regarding a mayor in Washington what he did to help the homeless problem. And I wanted to show that clip, if I may, Director. Is that ready?
Yeah.
This is a Republican mayor has incredible, simple idea to help the homeless. And it's not very long, very, very short.
Pick up people, we'll pay them $9 an hour. We'll ask them if they want a job for the day, if they want the dignity of work, if they'd like to help keep their community clean, just like it's your community and my community. And almost all the time they say yes. And so far we have gone out and we have paid people to clean up 128 city blocks. And we've picked up almost 50,000 pounds of trash and weeds. Think about what a tumbleweed weighs. And think about how many tumbleweeds it would take to fill up a 50,000 pounds. And so it's a big volume of work. And so our solid waste folks will go out there with them. And once again, they get the dignity of $9 an hour. They get a lunch. And then we have had so far of the 527 day jobs that have been created through this program, a quarter of these folks that are working with us, these panhandlers, have opted to invest in themselves by taking services that Father Rusty and his team connect them with, whether that's mental health services, whether that's substance abuse services, whatever it happens to be. 34 of these folks have been connected with permanent employment. That means there's 34 people that were panhandling that now have a job, because they got a chance on one day or 2 days to prove themselves and feel better about what they're doing. 84 of these folks have been connected with behavioral health and substance abuse services directly for those two things alone. And then 8 of these individuals actually qualified for our permanent housing, either through Albuquerque Heading Home or one of our other programs. And they were so chronically homeless that they have now been put into permanent housing.
So thank you for watching that.
Nicolas Sarkozy is back. The 61-year-old former French president has announced he's running for president in 2017.
Thank you for watching that, and I close by saying this. Oakland Housing Authority, we can make a difference one person at a time, one family at a time, one child at a time. Thank you for your work for Oakland Housing Authority.
Thank you. Very good.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're finished with announcements. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make that motion.
Moved, seconded. Have a wonderful evening, everyone.